It's time to head out on the front porch on KFRM. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation on the front porch.
In an emergency, would you be able to recognize signs of a stroke? I'm Amy Hadachek, and with us on the front porch today is our guest, Dr. Mahesh Jayaraman, and we're talking about Survive Stroke Week, which is May 6th through May 12th. And stroke is the fifth most common cause of death in America and the leading cause of adult disability, but with quick action treatment, patients can survive a stroke and live full, independent lives after the disease. The whole goal is educating us all, especially those most at risk, about the importance of identifying stroke symptoms and calling for medical assistance as quickly as possible. And Dr. Jayaraman has plenty of important information. He's the president of the Society of Neurointerventional Surgery and serves as chief of diagnostic imaging at Lifespan and is the director of the Neurovascular Center at Rhode Island Hospital at Brown University. He's also a senior member of the American Society of Neuroradiology and a fellow of the American College of Radiology. And Dr. Jayaraman, welcome and thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Amy. It's a pleasure to be on with you.
Well, we sure appreciate you. Tell us about Survive Stroke Week and surviving and thriving even after someone suffers a stroke. It's all about taking quick action.
It's all about time, Amy. You're absolutely right. So Survive Stroke Week is a campaign that we as neurointerventional physicians, the professionals who care for many stroke patients, have worked on to ensure that everybody out there understands the signs and symptoms of a stroke and knows how to take quick action. So, you know, when we think about a stroke, we use the acronym BEFAST, and that is BEFAST, and the B stands for balance. So if you lose your balance or seeing you're not being able to stand upright as easily, E is for your eyes. If you lose vision in one eye or the other, especially, or have blurry vision, especially if it's half an eye or one eye, F is for face, if you see drooping of one side of your face. A is for arm, if you see weakness of the arm or the arm is not quite as strong or falling down or not able to move an arm at all. S is for speech, and this could either be that you're slurring your words, they're not coming out as clearly or as articulate as you would like. And if you notice any of that, then it's T. T is for time. That means it's time to call 911. Really, really important that all of your listeners and everyone out there understands these symptoms and knows that it's important that if they notice these symptoms on themselves or even someone nearby, it could be a family member, a loved one, a friend, a colleague at work. Heck, we had a case that is known amongst our circles where someone was on a Zoom call and they other person on the call noticed that their face was drooping and suggested that maybe they ought to call 911. Think about that, right? The power of knowledge. So really what we're trying to get out there is we're trying to have everybody understand it's okay. Call 911.
Right, because driving to the ER, the emergency room, could result in minutes, if not hours, in the waiting room. So you want to make sure that you get there as fast as you can. And so if somebody sees something that's not normal, it's not nothing. Even one stroke symptom is enough reason to call 911.
Yes, that's true. That's very important. You don't need all of those symptoms. Any one of them, you should call 911. And you don't want to try to drive yourself. It's also important because there are certain things that the EMS folks can do right when they arrive that can be really critical. So usually when the EMTs arrive, among the things they'll do is they'll check your blood pressure, they'll check your blood glucose. Those are both important. The other thing that many EMS agencies do, and this is another part of our campaign, is we're encouraging every region, every state in the country, to have what we call a severity-based stroke protocol. What that means is when EMS arrives, they do a very quick assessment, takes about a minute or so, to figure out how severe are these symptoms, right? So some patients may have very minimal symptoms. Maybe they're just their face is drooping a little bit. And other patients are completely unable to move one side of their body to speak or understand. The types of strokes that those two individuals are having could be very different. And in some cases, the best hospital for that patient to go to may be very different. And so having EMS decide what is the most appropriate center for this patient is really critical.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that totally makes sense. So it's really important for the person to be triaged and transported as quickly as possible, but to an appropriate stroke care facility. And I think you all call it an appropriate stroke care facility. How do you know if the nearest hospital is an appropriate stroke care facility?
So great question. There are a variety of different levels of hospitals. The highest level is what we call a comprehensive or level one stroke center. So these are the centers that are able to care for the highest levels of stroke, the most complicated strokes. They have specialized teams of physicians, including neurointerventional physicians like myself, who are on call 24/7 and are always just minutes away from the hospital, if not in the hospital. And so having those types of specialized teams is really critical. At the same time, these types of resources, as you can imagine, take a lot. So not every hospital is going to be able to be a comprehensive stroke center, and that's okay as long as we have access within the community. There are many hospitals that are primary stroke centers, and these centers are able to quickly and efficiently give a clot-busting medicine for some of the milder strokes, and they play a really important role in our communities. And since most strokes are minor strokes, these centers are really important because it's not as though every stroke needs to automatically go to the comprehensive stroke center. We want to have the right patient go to the right hospital.
That's interesting. Okay. And so the whole purpose is that if stroke symptoms are identified quickly, patients have a chance to live full, independent lives upon recovery. And so some statistics about stroke in the United States, every 40 seconds, someone in the U.S. has a stroke.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah.
It's nearly about 800,000 to a million strokes a year in the U.S.
And so I understand that stroke is the fifth leading cause of death in the United States and is the leading cause of adult disability, too.
Yep, absolutely. And it's been the leading cause of adult disability for a long time. And, you know, I think that's what a lot of us associate with a stroke. Many of us can think of a family member, friend, loved one, someone who, when we say, oh, yeah, they had a stroke, I remember they weren't able to move that side of their body or they weren't able to speak properly or correctly again. Many of your listeners probably have had to care for family members who unfortunately have suffered from a stroke as well.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, let's talk about delayed intervention risks. Every minute that a stroke goes untreated, nearly 2 million brain cells die. And within each hour of treatment that it fails, the treatment fails to occur, the brain loses neurons. How does this happen?
Right. So there's two main types of strokes. And the most common is what we call an ischemic stroke, and that's from a lack of blood flow to the brain. And when the blood flow is blocked to a portion of the brain, that area doesn't get enough oxygen and those cells die. The other type of stroke, which is about 10% of strokes, is called a hemorrhagic stroke, and that's bleeding either into or around the brain itself. And that can also cause similar types of damage, but the 2 million neurons a minute is for typically patients who have an ischemic stroke, especially those caused by a large vessel occlusion. So as you can imagine, the arteries to your brain include big arteries that supply lots of blood flow, and those keep branching down to smaller and smaller arteries. When one of the major arteries is blocked, we call that an emergent large vessel occlusion. Those are the patients that are losing 2 million neurons every minute.
So the ischemic stroke, that's the one that happens 90% of the time?
That's correct. About 90% of the time, ischemic strokes. And luckily, the majority of ischemic strokes are not large vessel occlusions. The majority of them are occlusions of smaller arteries, but the most devastating type of ischemic strokes are the large vessel occlusions.
Okay, and then the hemorrhagic, those are 10%, but those are the worst ones, or?
Those are roughly 10%, but a lot of hemorrhagic strokes can be much more severe than some of the ischemic strokes.
And I understand that the number or even severity of stroke symptoms doesn't equal how dangerous or serious a stroke can be, so it really all boils down to medical professionals determining what stroke someone is having, what type of treatment they need. So it just varies. I don't know if anyone could...
No, you're absolutely right. And one of the other things is that both an ischemic and a hemorrhagic stroke, the symptoms can look very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason why, you know, you want to call 911. Some people say, oh, maybe you should, you know, crush up an aspirin and take it. Call 911. Because the symptoms can look very similar. There can be a lot of overlap. And until you're assessed by the EMS crew that comes to the house and then all the way to the medical professionals at the hospital, let them handle it. That's what we're all trained to do.
Okay. Well, coming up, there are certain groups of people more at risk than others of having a stroke. And we'll explain that right after this. Stay right there. With us on the front porch today is our guest, Dr. Mahesh Jayaraman, Chief of Diagnostic Imaging at Lifespan and the Director of the Neurovascular Center at Rhode Island Hospital, talking today about Survive Stroke Week, which is May 6th through May 12th. The theme is Arrive, Survive, and Thrive. And so I want to ask you today, stroke disparities. Apparently, stroke doesn't discriminate. People of all ages, races, and ethnicities could have a stroke at any time. But there's a group that seems to be more likely to have a stroke, and that would be African American people, 50% more likely. Why is that?
So that's a great question, Amy, and you're right. Stroke does not discriminate. Some people think they're too young to have a stroke. That's not necessarily the case. But specifically, the African American population has much higher chance of having a stroke. And, you know, we don't know all of the issues, but a big one is there's a much higher incidence of hypertension or high blood pressure in that population. And hypertension is one of the most important risk factors for a stroke. Some of the others are high cholesterol, diabetes, especially if it's not controlled, cigarette smoking, and then other lifestyle issues such as a sedentary lifestyle where someone's not very active and a poor diet. But getting back to your point about disparities, hypertension and the difference in the rates of high blood pressure in the African American population is one of the biggest reasons why, unfortunately, those members of our country are disproportionately affected. I want to share another statistic, though, and that is that, you know, we were talking about the importance of calling 911. Well, you know, we did a poll, and luckily, when we polled the country, over 95% of adults recognized that stroke is a medical emergency. Well, that's great, and that sounds awesome. Well, unfortunately, it turns out that Black adults are less likely to call 911. Only 33% would be willing to call 911, compared with 44% of white and Hispanic adults. So we have a lot of work to do in terms of recognition and understanding and the importance of calling 911 in the Black community, as well as the importance of checking for high blood pressure.
I wonder why they would be more hesitant to call 911.
You know, that's a great question, and I'm sure that individuals are looking at this. You know, one reason that about a fifth of the patients in our study said they wouldn't call 911 is because they felt they'd be embarrassed to overreact. But, you know, that's an excellent question as to why someone wouldn't be doing that.
Well, and I see that the importance also extends to the fact that here in a lot of your statistics, it's also that Black men are 70% more likely to die from a stroke compared to non-Hispanic white people and that black women are twice as likely to have a stroke compared to non-Hispanic white women. I didn't know that before either.
Yes, stroke affects all of us, but it does clearly disproportionately affect the black community.
Wow. And, of course, the key word to remember, if somebody didn't hear it earlier that we were talking about, is be fast. Fast. In other words, fast like quick. And the acronym B, B-E, and then F-A-S-T is a guide to the signs of the stroke. And each letter of the word, B-E, and then F-A-S-T stands for important things. B is loss of balance. E is loss of blurry eyesight or having some different changes in the eyesight. F is the face drooping or different looking. A is arm weakness. S for speech difficulty. And T means time to call 911. And again, I really appreciate that you were emphasizing the reason to call 911 and not just say, no, not a big deal. It is a big deal, and especially with EMS personnel being trained to immediately start assessing symptoms, and every minute counts. And if you see something not normal, that's the reason to call. Now, I thought something else really interesting is that you, in your information that you had sent me, Dr. J. Rahman, is the fact the main treatment is a thrombectomy. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So there are a variety of different treatments that depend on the type of stroke. But, you know, getting back to what we were speaking about previously, if we look at ischemic strokes that are caused by blockage of blood flow, if it's a blockage of one of the large vessels, what we call an emergent large vessel occlusion, then the most effective treatment for that is a procedure called a thrombectomy. Thrombectomy is a procedure where a neurointerventional physician like myself, working with their team of professionals, typically including nurses, technologists, anesthesiologists, nurse practitioners, and physician assistants, as well as often student doctors in training, do a procedure where we go into either the artery to the leg or the artery to the wrist, and while we're watching with x-rays, we can travel and have our catheters, these are small hollow plastic tubes, travel all the way up to where the blockage is in the brain and grab that clot and pull it out, or
wow,
suck it out. We have a variety of different tools that we can use to restore that blood flow. And these procedures sometimes can be done in as little as 10, 15 minutes, if you can think about
that.
Oh,
my gosh. That is amazing. That is mind-blowing, actually. We're so glad there are people like you in this world that do that. I mean, you know, it's just amazing that there are people for everything in this world and that it's all covered, and this is just amazing. So it's a minimally invasive procedure that uses catheters to reopen blocked arteries in the brain quickly, and those would be at the level one centers, or is it a certain place that does those?
So typically, if you want to have a thrombectomy done, you need to go to either what we call a comprehensive or level one stroke center, or there are some thrombectomy-capable centers that are able to do that. But the highest level center that has multiple teams on call 24/7 is going to be a comprehensive or level one stroke center.
Okay. And the thrombectomy improves the chance, of course, that a patient will not only survive the stroke, but also make a full recovery. And that is also truly just awesome.
It's unbelievable. And if I may, Amy, just share a story of something, just give you,
sure,
your reader, your listeners, an insight as to how dramatic these changes can be. I remember a patient we had a couple of years ago, is a gentleman who was out on the golf course, and he just collapsed. All of a sudden, couldn't move one side of the body, couldn't speak, he couldn't speak and he couldn't understand what was being said to him. So fortunately, they called 911. They didn't try to drive him themselves. They didn't try to do anything. His friends who he was out golfing with just called 911. They went out there. They went to the course. They drove him and transported him by ambulance directly to a comprehensive stroke center. And we did the thrombectomy procedure, and we opened up the blockage. And, you know, we do these patients, they're at our center, the patients are sedated for the procedure, but they're not under full anesthesia. And all of a sudden, everyone in the room heard the patient himself say, "Excuse me, can I say something?"
Oh, my gosh.
And he was like, "I can talk again." And it was really one of the most sort of chilling feel and incredibly gratifying feelings you can imagine.
Oh, my. Yeah, that's
just amazing.
That is. And that totally, that's it right there. That's what it's all about. And patients who receive that thrombectomy, like you said, that person you just mentioned, increase their life expectancy by 5 years compared to patients who don't receive the specialized treatment.
Yes. Yes. No, it's so important that patients understand just how important it is to get thrombectomy.
And also, for every 10 minutes saved in getting to a mechanical thrombectomy, patients experience an additional month of life free from disability, which is huge, too.
It's a big difference, big difference in the likelihood of being able to survive and thrive after a stroke. You know, if you think about it, 1 minute without blood flow, 2 million neurons are dying.
Mm.
1 hour without blood flow, the brain ages over 3.5 years.
My. And how did you get interested in doing this? I mean, I think it's wonderful that you do. I'm just wondering how you chose it.
Sure. So, you know, at going along as a resident, I always loved the brain. And I thought this was the most fascinating part of the body. Decided to train in these types of procedures so we could offer something for patients. And I've been fortunate throughout my career over the last two decades to watch the evolution of stroke treatment from something that we did but didn't have the right tools and didn't have the right understanding of the disease to now where we know we can dramatically improve patients' lives and outcomes.
Mm, and you definitely can. And so that's great that you're doing the Stroke Awareness Week and teaching people how they can not only survive but thrive. And so this is really important. So glad that you did go into this field. And not only that, but also we wanted to mention that, again, the thrombectomy only takes about a half hour, and it's just really important to get, you know, assessed by the EMS who come. And so that's why it's really important to call 911 and not just somebody drive themselves there.
Yes, absolutely. That's super important.
Oh, gosh. Well, coming up, we each can do a few things to reduce our risk of heart disease. And we'll review those symptoms, too. Stay right there. Details are next. And with us on the front porch today is our guest, Dr. Mahesh Jayaraman. He's the Chief of Diagnostic Imaging at Lifespan and the Director of the Neurovascular Center at Rhode Island Hospital, talking with us about Survive Stroke Week, which is May 6th through May 12th. The theme is Arrive, Survive, and Thrive. And, Doctor, we so appreciate you. And I guess a really important question that I have is, how do people get a stroke or heart disease? Is it from making choices, eating salty, fattening, sugary foods, uncontrolled high blood pressure, intense stress, or getting mad often, or what would it be?
I think the answer is all of the above. So when we think about risk factors for stroke, and you know, stroke is a issue with the blood vessels, and so those same risk factors apply to heart attacks as bad circulation as well. But really, when we talk about stroke, the big risk factors, you hit a nail on the head. Number one is hypertension, high blood pressure. This one's really important. And we often refer to this as the silent killer because patients' blood pressures can be elevated without any knowledge of it or any symptoms of it. And that's why it's really, really critical to go for an annual physical. And for patients who have not yet gone to a physical or scared, a lot of communities offer health screening where they check your blood pressure. You have to know what your blood pressure is. That's really important. So that's number one. Second is high cholesterol, and elevation in your cholesterol can cause plaque buildup in the arteries and restrict the blood flow, so that's an important one. Diabetes, uncontrolled diabetes, patients who are diabetic and don't have their blood sugars under control, that's an incredibly important one. And cigarette smoking. Cigarette smoking is a big risk factor for vascular disease such as heart disease and stroke. So those are ones. There's also a couple of important lifestyle ones. You touched on it. Diet, eating a healthy diet, and lifestyle changes, including diet, and our overall general activity level. You know, people think about it as exercise. I got to run a triathlon, or I have to do, you know, a marathon. Honestly, it's the little changes. You know, park your car a little further, take the stairs for a flight instead of the elevator. Those types of little changes that we can all make that make a huge difference.
Yeah, you're definitely speaking to me about doing some more exercise. And every once in a while we think, oh, I really want this salty food or the sugary treats. But I guess sometimes it's okay, but it's just not on a regular base, on a regular diet, so to speak.
That's exactly right. You know, I think I too am guilty of enjoying a salty or sugary treat from time to time. But I think you just don't want that to be the mainstay of your diet. Is avoiding, you know, overly processed foods and those types of things as the mainstay of your diet.
So when I think about what is the worst contributor to heart disease or stroke, the high blood pressure really is number one, it seems.
High blood pressure is probably number one. You know, I think that diet and overall physical activity level are really close as well. And that's something, especially, you know, people think, oh, I need to have a gym membership, I have to exercise, I have to do this and that. Walking, one of the most simple things we can all do is walk more. And it doesn't require any membership, it doesn't require any equipment, it doesn't require anything. You can do it indoors, you can do it out, just walk. Just being someone that walks more can make a huge difference in your overall health.
And what about a bicycle? Is that about the same thing as walking? I think walking, you're strengthening your bones a little bit more, any cardiovascular.
Yeah, walking is probably strengthening your bones a little bit more, but any type of physical activity compared to just being seated all day or not moving much. So getting up and moving is really important.
Moving. Okay, that's a good word to remember. What happens when we eat lots of salty or sugary food beside gaining weight? I mean, what's going on? Is it just all that extra fat percentage goes to blockage, or besides going to
it's
different?
It's a good question. There's a variety of different things that can happen that are related to both what happens in the blood vessels as well as what happens with our blood sugar levels. But in general, yes, those types of processes lead to overall restrictions of blood flow, predominantly on the basis of what we call atherosclerotic disease, where there's buildup of deposition of fat and cholesterol in the walls of the arteries. And in doing so, the blood flow is restricted or limited, and that damages the tissues.
That's really interesting. And so if somebody gets, for instance, red hot upset or gets mad easily, what happens to the body at that point too?
That's a great question as well. And, you know, studies have shown that things like meditation or learning how to calm your mind through a variety of different breathing exercises and tools can help calm down. It's probably that it gets you agitated, it gets you worried, and it probably leads to an increase in your blood pressure. So all sort of related to the same sort of concepts.
So anything else that contributes to heart disease beside the main ones that you mentioned, the high blood pressure?
Those are the big ones. You know, I think if everyone can take away from it and say, you know, do I know what my blood pressure is? Do I know what my cholesterol level is? For patients who are diabetic, do I know what my A1C number is? That's a number that diabetic patients use to track how well their diabetes is controlled. And then for all of us, what foods do I put on my plate and how much do I move throughout the day?
Yeah, we've got to make those decisions every day, at least three times a day. Those are, come right to the forefront of our minds of, am I going to go this way or can I make a right or a left, you know? And
right,
so,
for sure.
Oh, gosh. Well, also, I've heard of the aorta pulling away from the heart. I knew somebody that had that, and unfortunately, it wasn't a very good result. Why does that happen? Is that from high blood pressure, or would that be from something else?
So I think what you're probably talking about is something called an aortic dissection, if I am thinking of what you're thinking of.
I think so.
And there are a variety of risk factors for that, including smoking and high blood pressure. So those are two of the common risk factors for something like that is smoking and high blood pressure. There are some specific genetic conditions that can predispose a patient to that, but those tend to be much less common.
Okay. And I know there's a group, Lifeline Screenings, and I've gone to those, and a lot of people in the community have as well. They do certain screenings, the aortic aneurysm test and other things. And would these be screenings that could help you diagnose these things ahead of time so you know, oops, I better, you know, really watch my salt, or oops, I better watch my blood pressure, or something like that?
I think the most important thing would be to, you know, establish care with a primary care provider and at least go for an annual physical and get checked up. Knowing your blood pressure is really important. There are a variety of different other types of screenings that people do to look for some of these other things. But I would just start with the real simple ones, and that is, you know, have a primary care provider, know what your blood pressure is, and I would just start from there.
Okay. And blood pressure can be high a day or two. For instance, if you've just been jogging, it's gonna be higher, but we're talking about on a routine basis, like averaging it out.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. You know, someone, you know, if you just finished a vigorous exercise and quickly take your blood pressure, yes, it's gonna be a little bit high. But for most of us, that comes down to a normal level later. So you want to check your blood pressure when you're in a relaxed state. But for the patients who truly have hypertension, even in that relaxed state, their resting blood pressure is high.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And so once again, before we go to another break here, how about we review the important symptoms to be aware of if somebody does think they might be having a stroke, or they looking at someone who does, or like you said, somebody on a Zoom call that they noticed something. I mean, that was really important that you mentioned that too.
Yeah, let's do it. So the acronym that we're hoping everyone leaves with an understanding of is called BEFAST, B-E-F-A-S-T. The B stands for balance, loss of balance. The E stands for eyes and trouble with vision, especially if it's only affecting the vision out of one eye or one half of one eye or one half of both eyes. The F is for facial droop, if you notice one side of your face is drooping. The A is for arm weakness. S is for speech, either your words are slurred or you're not able to get the words out. And all of those indicate that it's T for time. Any one of those symptoms, doesn't have to be all of them, can be a sign of a stroke, and so you'd want to call 911 at that time.
Thank you so much. And for people who didn't catch those stroke symptoms and what to look for, just grab a pen or grab your phone and get ready to type and write it down, because we're going to mention them one more time in our last segment coming up in just a few minutes. So coming up, we'll talk about those very important symptoms again. Also, we're going to talk about another impact of stroke beside the physical impact. It's the financial toll. So we're going to do all of that right after this. Don't go away. With us on the front porch today is our guest, Dr. Mahesh Jayaraman. He is the Chief of Diagnostic Imaging at Lifespan and is the Director of the Neurovascular Center at Rhode Island Hospital. We're talking today about Survive Stroke Week, which we've mentioned is May 6th through May 12th, and the theme is Arrive, Survive, and Thrive. And Dr. Jayaraman, beside the physical impact, there's a financial impact too about somebody if they're needing to get help in a hospital for after surviving a stroke.
For sure. And, you know, we can think of the long-term impact of stroke. Think about stroke as it affects a community. You know, I give an example of a story of an unfortunate patient of mine who had a stroke, who was a grandmother, but she basically took care of her granddaughter so that her daughter could work. So the trickle effect that family was once the mom had a stroke, unfortunately, she was no longer able to care for her granddaughter. And since the patient's daughter couldn't afford daycare, she and needed to help her mom at home, she had to quit her job. And it just imagine the trickle effect and what impact it has, just one person having a stroke on a family, on a community. Another way to look at it, and that is, what is the impact of time on the cost of the healthcare system, right? So many of our patients who have strokes are older patients. They are Medicare patients, and that's funded by all of our tax dollars. And every 1 minute delay to care, just think about this, 1 minute delay to getting care for a patient who has a large vessel occlusion who can get a thrombectomy costs the healthcare system $1,000 in long-term cost.
Wow.
Just a 1 minute delay leads to an extra $1,000 in cost.
Hmm. So receiving the treatment specific to stroke will save on a mountain of cost down the road, like rehabilitation, recovery, the lost wages, as you mentioned, due to inability to work, and any financial implications of having someone to provide the care. So that's really important. And so stroke costs in the U.S. currently estimated at $56 billion. What specifically is this cost attributed to, or is it mainly what we just mentioned?
It's a lot of what we mentioned, but frankly, a lot of it, unfortunately, are the downstream impact. You know, stroke is the leading cause of long-term disability in the United States. The majority of those patients are Medicare beneficiaries, and so long-term disability caused by stroke is such an expensive thing, and it's such a burden both at the level of the individual patient and their family and loved ones, but also all of us as a society.
So by significantly reducing the amount of damage from a stroke and immediately calling 911 quickly, thrombectomy, which you've mentioned, helps reduce recovery time, getting patients back on their feet so they can live independently and work again. And so, again, we go back to the most important thing, that's recognizing the signs and symptoms of stroke early. Early is really to be emphasized as the key word to swift intervention and improved outcomes. And this being Survive Stroke Week focuses on the theme Arrive, Survive, and Thrive. And so I really appreciate today that you're helping us raise awareness, educating us all, and those most at risk, especially about the importance of identifying stroke symptoms and calling for medical assistance as quickly as possible. And so the whole goal is to empower people and their loved ones to become the first line of defense against this. And so once again, let's go through the important symptoms to be aware of. I know you call the words be fast. And so can you tell us what those letters stand for?
Absolutely. The B is for balance, a loss of balance. E is for eyes, either blurry vision or loss of vision, especially if it's only affecting one eye or the other. F is for face, drooping of one side of your face. A is for arm, weakness of the arm. S is for speech, either the words are slurred or they don't really make any sense. You're not able to understand what's being spoken to you. Any of those symptoms, it's T, time to call 911.
And what if there's just one symptom? If somebody feels, what if they slept on their arms, for example, and thought, oh, my arm feels kind of weak. How would you know if it was just sleeping on your arm or a symptom of stroke?
You know, they can be very similar. And unfortunately, we've had patients who thought they just slept on their arm funny, and that's why it was weak or numb. And it actually turned out to be a stroke that they slept through. So that's why if you have these symptoms, please call 911, seek medical care, let the medical professionals evaluate you, let us do our job and get a chance to check you out and see if this is a stroke or not.
And what about those mini strokes we hear about? I don't know if I use the word stroke, but the sort of like people say, a lot of people have had the super micro scale minis, I'm not sure what they're called, but...
Yep, so there's a variety of different types of... What you're talking about, one is something called a TIA, or transient ischemic attack. That's where symptoms exist for a small period of time and then go away. But that can be a tip of the iceberg, and in those, it's very important to call 911 or seek medical care, because you may have a drooping of the face, and you may have difficulty speaking, and you may have arm weakness, and maybe it gets better after 10 minutes, and you're like, oh, I'm fine. No, that could have been a warning sign that maybe a much larger stroke may be coming. So if that happens, very, very important to seek medical care. The other type of stroke that you may be talking about is something called a lacunar stroke or small vessel stroke. But depending on where in the brain, even a small amount of damage can cause significant disability in the right part of the brain. So we don't want to minimize any of these minor strokes. really, really important that you get checked out.
Sure, yeah. And again, if somebody feels even one symptom or they recognize a symptom from someone, just call 911. Don't think about, okay, I've got to drive them there. Because again, we talked about earlier, driving to the ER could cause, you know, plenty of time in the waiting room, and the whole point is to get there fast and get the EMS personnel to come and assess, because that's what they're trained to do. So there are several reasons to go fast besides, of course, being able to survive longer and getting less disability. Yes. And is there any other aspect of this that you want to mention? We have just a couple minutes left here.
Yeah, I just want to highlight the importance of calling 911 with a personal story. Years ago, I treated a patient who lived about 30 minutes away from our hospital, and they didn't call 911. The family put him in the car, took him to the closest hospital. At that hospital, he was assessed, took another 2 hours before they were transported here. And even though we were able to open up the blood vessel and the blockage, that patient still needed significant long-term care. And there was another patient about the same age, having almost the exact type of stroke, also about 30 minutes away. They called 911, and because of triage protocols, they were brought by EMS directly to a comprehensive stroke center, not the closest hospital. That gentleman was treated on a Friday, and on Sunday, he and his wife hosted some friends over for brunch.
Oh, my gosh.
Very, very similar patients with similar ages and similar types of stroke, but just what a difference 2 hours can make in someone's life.
That's an amazing story. I know my dad had a stroke, and he had physical therapy and went from a wheelchair to be able to go to a walker, to be able to go to a cane. Next thing, he put the cane down at the table, went out on the dance floor, and was able to dance. And everything
was wonderful.
Yeah, and that was great. And then a few years later, he had a second one, and unfortunately, that was a little more difficult. But it just goes to show that you can, you know, have a good outcome. And so he was able to do all that, and we encouraged him so much. You know, he just got a lot older, but there is a way to definitely see improvement and less disability. And oh gosh, Dr. Jayaraman, really super important information today. I so appreciate you and the work you're doing. I mean, this is huge.
Well, thank you so much for having us, and thank you for the opportunity to spread the word about stroke and stroke awareness to all your listeners.
Well, yes, we certainly appreciate you. So a big thank you to you today. Super timely information for Survive Stroke Week this week. The theme is Arrive, Survive, and Thrive. We sure hope you do, and thanks for listening today. Thanks to Dr. Jayaraman, just a wonderful person in just an incredible helping field. Thank you again, Dr. Jayaraman.
My pleasure. Take care.
Thank you all. I'm Amy Hatichek. Have a great day.